You're listening to TCRG to CEO Radio with your host, Courtney J, TCRG.
How cool was that intro, guys? That was created by today's guest, the awesome Diana Dersch. You guys are absolutely going to love this interview, and we talked for so long, we have to cut it into two episodes. So we have twice the Diana and twice the fun. If you're new here, this is Courtney J coming at you with TCRG to CEO Radio. Hello and welcome. If you're coming back for another episode, thanks for coming back. You can follow me on Instagram at CourtneyJ_TCRG. I post all throughout the week. We do stories. It's a good time. You can also join our listeners' Facebook group at www.facebook.com/groups/TCRG to CEO. We discuss each episode. We have a nice little community over there, and we would love to have you part of it. And finally, make sure you're subscribed to this podcast on whatever platform you're listening to so that you don't miss an episode. We talk all about business, teaching, Irish dance, and how they relate, how they interact with each other. And in this episode, you'll be hearing about how Diana has competed and what she plans to do with that after she's all done to hang up her shoes in the competition circuit. She's had an amazing career, and I have no doubts that she's going to have an amazing future. So let's get into today's episode. Okay, so we have Diana here on the show, and she's super excited, although I don't know who's more excited, her, me, or all of the people that are waiting to listen to this.
I'm pretty excited to be here, Courtney.
Awesome. So in case someone doesn't know you already, I feel like a lot of people do, but in case they don't, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I have been dancing for almost 21 years. It'll be 21 years in May. I've been all over the U.S. at this point with my different schools. I started in the Western region. I was in Southern California until basically 2011, 2012. And then I moved to Florida and I competed there from 2013 until 2017. And then I've been up in the Mid-Atlantic region now for a couple of years. So I've kind of been all over the place. In terms of my story, I started pretty much for the same reason everybody else started in the mid-90s, due to Riverdance and Lord of the Dance and all that stuff. I have very fond memories of dancing to Riverdance in my underwear in my grandparents' living room. Yeah. So that's pretty much what got me started. I had taken ballet and tap before that as a younger kid and just didn't really enjoy that very much. And so Irish just kind of ended up sticking. And I've come back a couple of times. Like, I did take a break a couple of times in college. And then, as a lot of people will know, I got pregnant and had a baby last year. Woo-hoo. So I took a break. Woohoo. I took a break during that period as well. But other than that, I've pretty much been dancing and competing for that whole time. So
awesome. Yeah. And the people that know you have asked lots of questions about a lot of the things that you just mentioned. So one of the things that people really want to know about is what it's like competing in different regions, like what the vibe of each one is, the demographics, the number of dancers. We have this vision, I guess, that every region is super different or has their own feel. And I guess you can debunk or prove that.
Well, like I said, I started off in the Southern region. When I was there, I was pretty competitive, but I wasn't super involved in the Irish dance community, I wouldn't say. Like, I didn't really go overseas for competitions, and the majority of the time I was there, I was not doing international competitions. Like, I didn't qualify for Worlds for, like, 10 years, basically. And so it was a different vibe there compared to since then, and I think that's just mostly because of my involvement in the Irish dance world as I've gotten older. But I was also in a really hard competition in the Western region. My age group, which was the 1991 kids, I know you share that with me.
Yeah, surprise, we're the same age.
Whew, yeah, fun stuff to find out. Basically, my entire competition was world qualifiers from Butler, Fear and O'Connor.
Yeah, I remember, like, way back, there was, like, Reagan Matsukani, Megan Ichimoto, Olivia.
Oh, yeah. Yep, Yeah, all super talented dancers. But pretty much, like, I think probably about 50% of the people who qualified every year in my group were from BFOC. And it just made it really hard to break into that world qualification group because there's just so many of them. And I mean, that's a great school. They clearly have done a great job getting their dancers to be, you know, big title holders. But it was just really hard for me. I came from a much smaller school, especially kind of in the early 2000s, it just kind of drifted off. I think Irish dance was not in a super growing stage at that point, but our school specifically wasn't really growing. It was shrinking. And so from that perspective, like it was really hard to qualify. And there's several years in a row that I was so close to qualifying and I just couldn't. And so finally in 2007, I did. That was my 8th Oireachtas. And so from that perspective, it was just the level of competition there just seemed really insane. And I actually remember, and I say this only because my next region happened to be the Southern. I remember that all the girls were like, oh, everybody should go to the Southern region. It's so much easier there. Like there's no competition. Like everybody will world qualify if they go. And so, like I said, I went there next. But I had done that after basically did I do two? I missed one Oireachtas, during my break, but I came back in 2013 and did the Southern region. And at first it was a little bit easy, I would say. But as things ramped up, it got really difficult. That was my first time in senior ladies and I've been in senior ladies ever since. And there's a lot of people. Like every year we got the next age group, right? You know, so yeah. We had more and more champions coming up from these other age groups. And so over time, it just became this crazy competitive thing. And my TC will say that she thinks I shocked the region into everybody working really hard and, you know, coming in. I came in and started placing really well immediately. And so she thinks that has something to do with it. And maybe it does. I really can't speak to that. But it was all of us were just kind of at the point in our lives where we were able to travel a lot for competitions and work really hard. Fortunately, my job was really flexible at the time. So I was able to be dancing and traveling a lot. So I think the Southern region may have been easy previously, but it certainly is not anymore.
Yeah. I don't think it is at this point.
Yeah, for sure. So then Mid-Atlantic is where I'm at now and I'm with a much bigger school. I've never been with a big school with multiple locations and multiple teachers before. And I don't know, I think the Mid-Atlantic is maybe a little bit, I don't know, more invested. I think the Southern region really was. It was very friendly. There was a lot of camaraderie there. But my experience so far, I mean, for anybody who's been following the Mid-Atlantic region on Facebook or maybe even just following me, they held a mock worlds competition a couple weeks ago.
Which I'm super interested in hearing about.
Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit later, but they put that on as a way to prepare their dancers, their world qualifiers for the world championship format this year. And I think that that's really cool. We also got jackets, so we will go to the worlds and have our jackets representing the Mid-Atlantic region. So there's just a lot of things that they do. I hate to use the term ritzy, but that's kind of the vibe that I get, and not in a negative way at all, but just that they have a little bit more resources. The Petries obviously are very involved with the running of the region. And so there's just this level of support that I've seen so far. I mean, it's really not been very long that I've been here, but I think that that's a really cool thing that I've enjoyed so far.
Yeah, definitely. One thing that you mentioned that I want to come back to was when you were in the Western region trying to break into that world qualifying pack. I want to talk about it because I know that I have several open dancers that I work with at home that are feeling that struggle in some kind of way, whether it's breaking into placing in the open pack or they do have ambitions of qualifying for worlds. Like, how did you break in, or how did you keep fighting when we both know that pack was so strong and you could have very easily been like, well, I'll never get there, so I just won't try as hard.
It's actually really hard for me to remember because that was quite a long time ago for me. I just never considered giving up on dance. Like, that was never something that I wanted to do. I just went forward and just kept doing it. I think at that point I had talked with my teachers about my costume and my look. That was something that was just starting to kind of matter a little bit more. Yep. Oh, you need to get a Gavin because then you'll have a Gavin and you'll be recognized as having a Gavin. And so that actually was part of it. I think I had a Gavin right before I qualified, but anyway, I just didn't give up. Like, I didn't want to stop dancing. I didn't want to stop going after that goal. And slowly a lot of those top dancers were moving on to better things. I mean, they were in high school, so it was kind of a time of transition for many of them. And there was some upheaval in the results as well. We had a lot of other dancers coming up from other schools that were not from, you know, that weren't big, doing really well. And so I talked with my teacher. I think I did a lot more privates at that point. I didn't ever really do a whole lot of home practicing, which is kind of embarrassing. But
I was the same, though, when we were that age. Like, I did not get it until I was in college.
Yeah, and it's hard. I mean, I had a social life. I had school. I was homeschooled, but still, I did have school. And I went to class 5 days a week. So in a lot of ways, there was not really a reason for me to practice at home. But I'm sure that I put in a lot more effort in just in class, trying to make sure that I was fit and had good steps that I could execute well and working out some of my body issues. And by that, I mean just my arm and body problems when I was dancing. And so just kind of refining some of the things that I knew were my weaknesses in order to break into that group.
Okay. Yeah. I always like to ask that when it comes up, because I feel like the more people they hear it from, the more inclined they are to do it and make it happen.
Sure.
So, and just so the people are following along at home, you moved to the Southern region for college, right?
Sort of. Yeah. I moved kind of in the middle of college. I had finished community college in California, and then I met my husband in Colorado, actually, when we were there for a program together during one semester. And after that, I knew that I would need to move to Florida in order to continue being with him. And so I moved to a small private school in St. Augustine that I absolutely loved. And I was only really there for about a year to finish up my degree. But that's originally the reason that I moved.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and I know that a lot of dancers, when they get to college age or they're coming into the time when they transition to their career, they have to balance whether kind of their career or dancing leads the decision. And so right. I'm just curious what the balance was of, like, did you move kind of in the back of your mind going, well, I know there's a dance school nearby, or was it just like something that happened?
I had kind of gone into that season of life thinking this might be it. Like, this might be my retiring moment. And I pretty much was okay with that. I mean, I kind of had to be. Like, I was making a pretty significant life change in states. And I was trying to really be okay with that. Like, if that was the end of the road for me, then that'll be that. And dance kind of just found its way back into my life. There was no studio where I was at college, but there was where my husband was at the University of Florida in Gainesville. And so I actually did a workshop with them. After reaching out to the teacher, her name is Allison, I reached out to her and I did a workshop with them, and it just kind of one thing led to another, and I started competing again, and she's like, hey, let's like have all these really lofty goals. And I was like, okay. And it was just kind of the right place at the right time, I guess. And so once I did finish college, then I was able to be in Gainesville with my then husband, and I got plugged right into the school and started to compete again. So to answer your question about like, how did I balance it? I mean, I just wasn't really dancing for a portion of time, and I was totally okay with that and just kind of let God lead my life in terms of whether that was going to still be something that I did or not. And it happened to work out that I could.
Yeah. I feel like that's always the best way, when it just happens and then you kind of can feel really right about it.
Right.
Like it was meant to be. So we mentioned all, you know, your different regions, you've been to different schools, and a lot of people are curious just what some of the similarities and differences are, what you've learned from being in different schools.
Yeah, so I think I've learned overall that it's not all that different. The first time I set foot in the studio in Gainesville, I was nervous and not really sure like what the teacher was going to be expecting of me. And same thing when I started classes last summer up here. There were just a lot of nerves, kind of like, I don't really know how they teach, or like, is it going to be hard for me to learn the choreography? And I really just did learn that it's really not that different. I have been able to adapt to a lot of different teaching styles. That being said, I think that a good teacher is going to adapt to their students' learning styles as well.
Yep.
Then that's certainly really important. But I don't know. I really didn't find a whole lot of differences between them other than maybe their personalities. They've certainly all had their own approaches to teaching. I have a very, very close relationship still with Allison. And right now, my current teacher, I mean, we have a great relationship, but it can't be the same.
Right, because it's a totally different size of a school.
Yeah, exactly. He has hundreds and hundreds of students and a lot of top dancers. Whereas in Florida, I was one of maybe, probably when I started, about maybe five or so champion dancers. And towards the end, I was basically it. And so there's a lot of differences in how we can approach training when you have somebody who can literally be one-on-one with you. Like,
yeah,
every
it's just like the depth of that personal relationship and how exactly that translates into training.
Yeah. A couple things I've been surprised about. I've not always gotten the same corrections across the board. And I don't know if that's necessarily just how I've developed as a dancer. You know, certainly I'm not going to be struggling with the same things that I might have 10 years ago. But different people see different things. There's not really been a ton of consistency with that. The weaknesses I know I have, obviously I'm always going to see, and I think most good teachers would recognize those things, but they've all had something new to show me about my dancing. And that's been really valuable. And I've also learned there's more than one way to do something well.
Yeah.
I mean, we were kind of just talking about the differences in size and approach to students. They're all successful in their own way. And it's just been totally different approaches to that, different sizes of schools, different class setups. Like right now, I commute almost an hour and a half to get to class, which is completely foreign to me because both of the other schools I've been at were within 10 minutes of my house. And so not only is it a really long commute, but there's not classes on a regular basis unless I am willing to drive even farther than that.
Yep.
And at my first school, like I said, I was there five, maybe six sometimes days a week. And at the end there, I was pretty much just about as frequent as that as well in Gainesville. So, you know, it's hard. You have to be willing to adapt, and it's actually not that difficult to adapt as long as you have a good set of tools to know how to put in the work outside of class, which is something that I've been learning and figuring out.
Yeah. I'm glad you talked about how every school you've been in has been set up a little bit differently, and there's different sizes and all that, and that there is more than one way to be successful, or there's more than one way to do things, quote unquote, right. A lot of people that listen to the podcast follow me on Instagram, and, you know, I do my stories and I'll have my opinion about something. And then, you know, people jump in and be like, oh, like, cool, I never thought about that that way because my school's like this. Or like, we often have good back and forth conversations about just different things, and different topics spark conversation. And it's just good, I think, for dancers to hear, because I think sometimes dancers in smaller schools maybe worry that, like, oh, well, I'll never get there because I'm not in a big school. And I came from a small school. I world qualified with a small school, and you can most certainly get there. And every person will have a good fit for them, or they can be like you and just be a chameleon and adapt to whatever situation they're in.
I don't know about chameleon. But yeah, I mean, I think I've learned a little bit more about myself as a dancer, like I said, because of the corrections that have been helpful, but also just like, I don't know, that I think I have, if I could pick my teacher, I think I have like this conglomerate of different qualities and characteristics that I would put into one teacher.
Yeah.
But not a person like that. And so like, I do like to be pushed really hard, but I also need to be given the freedom to do things my way. I absolutely love choreographing, and I pretty much just put a lot of choreography vomit on the floor when I'm doing it myself. And so I need someone's feedback to kind of tell me, okay, that works and that really does not at all. And so I had that in Florida, and I had that a little bit in California as well. But now with a big school, I don't have a lot of that freedom, but that's okay. Like I still feel like I need some kind of choreographing outlet maybe. But you know, the way that I'm being instructed now is still making me a better dancer in some way, shape or form, even if it's not my preference.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and I always feel like you always have to balance as a teacher, the choreographic freedom with kind of like, well, these are the things that as this level of a dancer, you should be able to do, right, or should be able to master, even if it's a little bit outside your comfort zone. So
yeah. And I cannot imagine if my current teacher had individual choreography for all of his students, or at least all of his top dancers. That'd be nuts.
Yeah.
Like, that would be absolutely nuts. And like, you know, when I'm one of five champions, like, we can all have our own set dance and it's no big deal. So anyway.
Yeah. No, I love that. Anything else that you've learned from dancing in other schools, or just what you've learned about yourself along the way?
I have learned my own strengths as a dancer and then kind of refined my weaknesses as things have gone on. I think I know, like, one of my qualities is that I have loose ankles. So I think that that's something that's valuable to know, that my choreography perhaps should show that off.
Yep.
Or just other things, you know, like, I have a very unique style, and a lot of adjudicators my whole career have commented on my style, and they don't say specifics. They just say lovely style.
Yeah.
It's great. But I mean, that's something that I try to capitalize on as well. And if it's one thing to have a teacher tell you and another for you to develop and really own who you are as a dancer. And so just being in the Irish dance world for 20 years, but then also having all these different experiences and these different teachers speaking into my life and my, my dancing, like, that just has really helped me figure out who I am as a person and as a dancer, to find that confidence when I'm on the stage.
Yeah. And I think having a personal dancing style is a great way to set yourself apart, even if you don't have all your weaknesses ironed out yet. Like, if you can celebrate your strengths and really hone in on
that. Sure. Yeah.
It's great.
Yep.
So, I mean, speaking of, I remember seeing you dance for the first time in Montreal. At that point, I had retired, become a TCRG. Somehow we had never crossed paths before then. We still haven't in real life, but I remember seeing you dance for the first time. And by that point, you were sporting your signature look of the pixie cut and the red dress. And to me, I noticed you first because of your dancing, and I remembered you because of that look. And so many people want to know about the dress, the story behind it, and the pixie cut.
Yeah. That's kind of a story. I'll try to keep it as brief as I can and still get all the information in there. So back in 2010 or 2011, my parents had stopped financially supporting me. And so I was at the point where I needed a new costume. So this was back in California. And so I started looking into ways to make my own costume. I kind of got this picture in my head of what kind of prefab dress I needed to get in order to make it Irish dancey.
Yep.
And obviously, you know, in line with the competition standards. So I knew that I needed something that was going to help support itself. Something that was asymmetrical was just something that stuck in my mind, because if it was strapless, I didn't know how I was going to keep it up. And then if it had any kind of sleeves or straps or anything, I figured it would probably look too much like a non-Irish dance dress. And so I had just started Googling. I spent hours Googling just to find just the right kind of dress. And I needed something with a skirt that would be appropriate as well. And so I don't really know how I did it. I just did a lot of research and worked out the kind of dress that I needed. I didn't have colors in mind or anything like that, but just I needed a one-shouldered dress. So I did eventually find one, and it happened to be red. I actually was originally going to get a pink one, but they didn't have it in stock, and so they offered me red, and I said, sure. And so I bought it, and I sent it to a dressmaker that was local and asked her to embroider it for me. And she did, and there was some trial and error there, but we got something that I was really happy with, and that was just Google images of Celtic knotwork that I then photoshopped to be the right way. And so she did that, and then I also had to get some other things, like I obviously got some Swarovski crystals, and I had to get some kind of top to wear under the dress, and so I did, and probably I think it was about $450 all said and done for all of that, which, as everybody knows, for an Irish dance dress is incredibly inexpensive. So I started off with it like that. My workshop teacher at the time happened to be there when I showed her kind of like my vision for the dress. And she said, okay, well, if you're going to do red and black, you have to be either blonde or black with a wig. And I said, okay, well, I'm not going to bleach my hair, so I'm just going to go black. And so I did. I dyed it black, and I actually competed without a wig for one of the competitions. And my teacher said, no, you need a wig. You need the bounce. You need the look. Like, I understand you wanted to make your own dress, but you really need to have the wig to pull it together. And so I obliged. But shortly thereafter is when I started competing in the Southern region. And fortunately, Allison was very supportive of me to continue with my dress. She did not make me get a new one. She was much more into like natural hair and really classy, basic costumes. She really didn't buy into a lot of the fluff. And I think over time, she probably did a little bit for me, for my specific success as a dancer. But for the most part, like, her philosophy was just to be very natural and to let the dancing shine. So yeah. Needless to say, she let me continue to compete in that dress. And I just didn't wear a wig for my first competition back because I was like, meh, I don't want to deal with a wig. Like, I'm already out of shape. That's fine. So it was a great dress for that little bit of time. That's just basically, I probably competed for about a year with it like that. And then as I got more competitive with her, she said, let's see what we can do to update it a little bit. So I added some more crystals on it, and I actually took apart the skirt and magically re-sewed it into a much more modern looking one. I hope that everybody agrees it's more modern. But I actually Skyped with my grandma a lot, and she kind of helped me work through how to fashion it and then how to reattach it to the bodice.
You're so resourceful.
Oh, thank you. It was quite a project, but I didn't have a lot of money, so it was kind of all I had, and I have done some sewing before, and so I was at least familiar with how to work with stuff. So I was able to, I really don't know. Like, if you asked me to replicate it, I don't think that I could. I actually have tried three times now to try to make kind of a new dress for myself without spending money, and they have all been massive failures. But so over the years, I mean, I've added to it and changed it up just a little bit, but for the most part, I ended up retiring the dress after 8 years, I believe, 7 or 8 years. And so I no longer have that, sadly.
It had a good run.
It's falling apart. Yes, it really had a great run. It was probably worn about 100 times, maybe more than that. So
yeah, I don't doubt it.
For a homemade dress, it was quite the dress. And, you know, a lot of people said, oh, who made your dress? It's so beautiful. Did Gavin make it? No. Thanks, though.
No, I love it. I mean, and I think actually how you could wear it for so long is that it was because it was so unique. You know how trends like come and go, and
right.
You can see when a dress is from 2016 or, you know,
right.
That one was like, it was just so different that you couldn't pinpoint it to a certain year or era, so it had more longevity.
But to be honest, Courtney, I wish I could still wear it now, because it fits in pretty stinking well with a lot of the trends that are going on right now. Like the big floofy skirts are no longer in. Everything is much more tight.
Yeah.
Lace or, you know, nude sleeves that are very fitted. Like it's pretty much in style right now. And the only reason I'm not wearing it is because it no longer fits me, sadly.
All good, but yeah, I must come to an end.
Yes, I know. But it really was time to. It was much needed to get a new dress.
Yeah. No, I mean, everybody was dying to know about the dress and the real story. And I mean, honestly, I'm not an adjudicator or anything, but I thought it gave you a unique look, especially with the pixie cut. Honestly, the pixie cut was integral to like the unique look.
Right. Yeah, the pixie is something that I've absolutely loved, and I'm sure almost all dancers who wear wigs can relate to me that I would get headaches at the end of the day. It was just miserable. Like, it would make competitions that much more stressful, and by the end of the day, I would have a migraine, and it would just be miserable, especially at, like, a Roctis when, you know, awards would be at, like, 10 o'clock at night or whatever. And so I really love the pixie because I don't even have to worry about that. And plus it's just something that I've done to set myself apart. So I'm assuming you want the story a little bit more about.
Well, yeah, it's the iconic Diana.
Right. So when I did come back to competition in 2013, like I said, I kind of did it just to avoid the wig, and my teacher said, sure, let's do that. And so it was black at that point. And so if you've followed me for a really long time, or you knew me in the Southern region or anything like that, you'll know that it was originally black. Shortly thereafter, another girl in the Southern region who I sometimes competed with did a black pixie as well. And that actually led to a lot of confusion at competitions, and I was mistaken for her a lot, and I'm assuming she was mistaken for me as well. And so going into Worlds in Montreal in 2015, we wanted to set me apart even a little bit more. And so we were just kind of talking, and it's like, well, I guess the only really option is to go blonde. Like, that's the only other thing that's going to work with the black and red dress. And so I was not super excited to bleach my hair because I know that's not great for it, but I decided to go with it. I figured it would be a short-term thing. And so I did, and it was a hit. I actually started in January competing with it blonde, but Montreal, when you saw me, Courtney, was pretty much the first time that it was an international phenomenon. you know, when I started actually being a little bit more recognizable. And you know, it's just become part of my brand. It's something that you know me from. And yep. I think most adjudicators, a lot of teachers, and certainly a lot of dancers know me as the pixie. They may not even know my name or who I dance for or anything like that, but they know me. And so it's really just become part of my identity in the dance world. And I hope that that never goes away, because I certainly do not ever want to resort to wigs again.
Well, and it's followed you to your transition to another school and in another region. And although your dress has so changed, your hair is still the same. So I feel like it's stayed.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And I mean, I've even tried it brunette, and at my last Aractus before we moved, I just decided to have it brunette because I had also had it lilac and red and some other colors that year. And so I just decided to do it brunette, and it didn't seem to be super successful, but I also think that that was just an off year for me. So I'm not going to say that it's the color specifically, but certainly the blonde pixie is something that's stuck with me, since 2015.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm curious, in the transition to your new school, Kevin is an adjudicator, correct?
Yep.
So he didn't have a problem with it. He gave you the thumbs up, or how much of a struggle was that?
It wasn't really a struggle. I kind of said, hey, so I don't have to wear a wig, right? And he said, hey, you trust me, right? And so it's kind of like this, who knows what's better? I don't really know. And eventually I asked, and he said, no, you're fine. Like, just keep it. And I think, I mean, I certainly felt like I needed to have the pixie because I didn't think that going back to competition with a wig was going to do me any favors.
Right, because it's like the one thing that's remained consistent.
Right. Yeah, and like I know that a lot of people specifically know me for my hair. They may not necessarily recognize my face. Sure, my dancing might be, you know, have its own style or whatever, but I think that's really what people remembered about my look. And that might certainly at least jog their memory too of who I am. And so I knew that that was going to follow me here. And so who's to say if I'm quote unquote correct in making that decision, but I think at least deep down, he knows that that's part of my personal brand, that even with a new school and a new dress, that's not necessarily something that was going to change. So that being said, I mean, wigs are still the expectation. And I often wonder if my choice with hair or costume have affected my placement. I mean, I have a lot of judges who have given me specific comments on my look, either with their comment feedback in the scores or just off the, you know, when they pass me in the hallway or whatever. I feel like it might play a part in just the subconscious of people scoring me as well, because you think of a world champion and you think of this very put together person with the ridiculously sparkly, trendy dress with the hair and the perfect whatever, with the crown that's in style. And, you know, you think of all of these things when you picture a world champion. I think it's really hard for a lot of people, and even me sometimes, to picture someone without that, specifically without the wig, as a world champion or as that top dancer. So as much as I love it and I never want to change, you know, I do wonder, you know, is that something that's played a factor in any of my less fortunate placements? I guess we'll never really know.
Yeah, we won't know, I guess, for sure. But I mean, at least for me, and again, I'm not an adjudicator, but going back to seeing you dance for the first time in Montreal, had you been costumed the same way as everyone else, meaning, you know, a big designer dress and mm-hmm. a wig, mm-hmm. would you have probably still gotten my attention and I would have said, wow, she's a great dancer? Definitely yes. Would right. I still remember it to this day? Maybe not.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's always hard to be the person that's breaking the norm, and it is, it's a risk, but yeah. I think it definitely for you, it's paid off.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to hear that from somebody who's not me or my teacher.
Right. So we've covered the dress, we've covered the pixie cut, we've covered the regions, and the other big thing that everyone wants to know about is how you have managed to continue competing and dancing and doing all these amazing things now that you are a mom.
Yeah, it has not been easy. After getting pregnant, I kind of was in a similar position as I had been in college, where I was just like, okay, maybe this is it. Maybe I'm done. I don't know that I'll be able to manage practicing while having a newborn at home. My husband works crazy hours, and so he's not home a lot to just like watch her whenever I want to go to the gym or practice or whatever. So that's certainly been something that was, especially during pregnancy, something that I was thinking a lot about. And I felt like I was at a pretty good spot just being willing to have that be like the end of my career. Unfortunately, it's not. It has been really difficult. Balancing mom life and dance life is certainly not easy. And I've connected with a few other mom friends who are still actively competing as well. And that's been really cool. But my approach to training has had to totally change, and in ways that I didn't necessarily anticipate. Right now, I commute to class, and so I knew that was not going to be sufficient to get me to lose some of my baby weight, but also just get me back in the right kind of fitness level. And so I spend a lot of time at the gym and hardly any time in the studio. And that's been like counter to my entire 20-year previous experience of practicing.
Just to like get your baseline fitness back?
Exactly. Like I basically didn't do anything for an entire year. My first trimester was brutal. I was on voluntarily bed rest. Basically, I just was not up to doing anything other than laying in bed. So I lost all of my muscle tone. I obviously lost a lot of my cardio. And then the rest of my pregnancy was just, you know, painful or awkward to really do anything. And then after, you can't really do strenuous activity for a couple of months anyway, but I also just was trying to figure out how to be a mom. So for an entire year, I lost all of the stuff that I had previously had in my body with the level of fitness and, you know, mental capacity as well. And so it's just taken a lot of hard work to get that back. And that being said, I mean, I feel like now she's just about 9 months old, and I think it's gotten a lot easier. I've figured out how to get to the gym 4 to 5 days a week, and she has childcare while she's there, so I don't have to worry about that. And I actually have a practice set up at the gym now. I have some shower pan liner rolls that I brought that they let me store there that I can roll out and practice on, so I can actually get more dancing in. And so I do have a good setup here, but that still is really hard to make it to classes. And what a lot of people may not realize is, like, when you have a kid and you don't have a spouse to support you and you don't have family in the area, and that's me, you'd have to pay for childcare, and it's not cheap. For me to drive to Baltimore one day a week for class would be 6 hours of babysitting.
Yeah.
And just once a week. And that's just financially out of, like, that's just crazy. Like, I just, there's no way that I can afford it, especially since I'm not working. I know a lot of people do that because they're working and they need the childcare, but for us, it's just really hard. And so that's just been a challenge to actually get to class. And, you know, I wish that I could, and I kind of wish that I had a setup where classes were closer and I could go more frequently, but I'm just trying to take it as it comes and say, okay, I'm going to put in the work as much as I can when I'm not at class, so that when I am at class, like, it's going to be really valuable time. So that's really what's changed the most about my approach, to balancing being a mom.
Interesting. But yeah. And honestly, now I'm even more impressed, because I thought that you had just, like, beasted your way right through pregnancy and kept on dancing. I had no idea that you pretty much were on a year-long hiatus.
Yeah, it was pretty hard. And I did post a couple of videos throughout my pregnancy. I did get up and dance a couple of times, but it was so, so hard. And I was not active, sadly, the entire time. And most of that was just because of my sickness that I had while I was pregnant. But it's hard. I totally commend anyone who dances through any part of their pregnancy.
Yeah. Wow. So before you were super sick, like, during your pregnancy, what was your plan? Like, what was your ideal, or what did you think it was going to be like? And then now we know that it ended up being, you know, bed rest and just discomfort and all the things.
Yeah. I mean, I had planned on joining the school when we first moved up here, and I had already put the call in and everything and had plans to go to class. And literally the week I was going to go back to classes is when I started feeling sick. And so that was really frustrating. And then I thought, oh, well, I'll just get through first trimester and then I can go back to dancing and it'll be fine. That none of that really happened. And so I just said, you know what, I'm just going to give it time and I'll aim to go back 3 months postpartum. And I thought it was just going to be this uphill battle of mostly cardio fitness and, you know, getting the muscle tone back, which I knew would come back because it always had. But it wasn't like that. I had a lot of foot pain, especially in the first couple of months. And it was crazy. Like, it wasn't just, oh, I had my feet in hard shoes for a 3-hour class. It was like constant foot pain that was exacerbated by being in dance shoes. And I've talked with several people about it, and it sounds like the most likely reason is just the relaxin that was still in my body, which is still here because of breastfeeding. But just the difference in hormones and that relaxin flowing through makes your joints looser, and also can cause pain with normal activity. So I dealt with a lot of just pain that I really didn't expect to have at all coming back to it. And I ended up starting, like I said, 3 months after she was born, which was after nationals. I figured 3 months was plenty of time to kind of get me back into feeling okay, you know, and getting some sleep.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to wait until after nationals just to make it easier on everybody. So, I mean, now I'm mostly back to what I would consider normal training, a normal fitness level, which is still not nearly ideal, especially for the goals that I have in mind. But for the most part, like now that it's 9 months out, I'm feeling much more like myself, which is really encouraging.
Yeah. I mean, and you qualified for Worlds at the Oroctas. So, I mean, that was what, like 7 months postpartum, like 4 months of actual training again.
Yep. Right. Yeah. Even less than that.
That's crazy. I mean, and it sounds like you were, you know, not starting over, because some things are like riding a bike. It's not like you're going to forget how to treble, but like being able to do it at a world qualifying standard is a whole nother story.
Yeah. That was our goal, was just to come back and qualify. You know, I obviously want to do way better than that at Aractus, and previously had, but I could not have asked for much more from myself, especially considering that I did it coming back after having a baby. So definitely proud of myself for that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the rest of the Irish dance world is proud of you too. And especially, you know,
thank you.
I think everyone else will be learning, just like I am, of the challenges that stood before you even got back to class.
Right. Yeah.
So a lot of people are wondering just kind of the different challenges of returning to competition level dancing. And we've talked through some of the, you know, childcare challenges and like some of the logistics even of that. But I think this is going to be great insight for teachers and dancers to have too. I know for me, you know, I don't have this problem of trying to figure out how to work with someone who is a recent, you know, new mom, but who knows, in the future I could. And since I've never had any children, I don't know what the challenges are. So I think teachers that listen to this, it would just be helpful information to have, because people are certainly staying dancing longer.
Yeah. So first I'll talk about my expectations. I mean, I expected to just come in and just, you know, have an uphill battle of fitness, and that was not the case. And so I had to lower my expectations and just put in the work as best I could. And that was really hard, because I know the standard that I had when I was still competing before Liesl was born. And obviously my teacher knew that as well. But it was hard, and I just had to adjust my expectations of what I was asking my body to do. And I think the reason that I've had, or I should not the reason, part of what's been nice is having all this experience behind me before having this experience with a baby. Because if I had not had years and years and years of getting to know my body, getting to know the best ways to train, you know, and gathering a lot of this knowledge about taking care of my body, I've had so much stuff come up saying, okay, well, this is hurting. Maybe I should think about this, or maybe I should try this, or okay, this is the start of shin splints. I need to be careful now. And just all of that wisdom that I've collected over the years has been invaluable, just to get my own expectations set up a little bit better, and to listen to my body and what it needs, because I'm dealing with a different body. And as much as all the other experienced moms out there going, oh, well, it'll come back, you just got to wait, be patient, you know, it does come back. Your body really does come back surprisingly well. But at least at first, it's hard. Like, I've never had to deal with losing weight on top of being a competitive dancer. That's just not something that's ever been a struggle for me. And so coming back, it's like, okay, I need to be managing my weight while also trying to train. And in a lot of ways, I needed to work that out before I could really train as I wanted to as a dancer for competition.
Yeah, so, I mean, and I feel like everyone always knows their body best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really hard for someone else to tell you what you should be feeling or what's normal, because all of our normal is so different.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, that's a really good point, just of knowing you know, hey, I've had shin splints before, so I need to watch it versus, oh, this is something brand new. Maybe this is something related to hormones or, you know, like the foot pain you were talking about before. This is not something that's normal for me.
Right.
I need to look into that.
Exactly. Yeah. And so along with the expectations I had, I mean, my teacher has expectations as well, and he has high lofty goals for me as he does for most of his dancers. And I don't want him to excuse my dancing because I'm coming back as a new mom. Like, I don't want him to give me any kind of special preferential treatment and go easy on me in class because he knows the other things I have going on at home, because that's not what I'm paying him for. You know, I'm paying for him to be my teacher and to give me corrections and to help me become a better dancer. And so along with his pushing me and really trying to help me succeed, something I need is for him to understand that I do know my body and to be willing to listen to me when I say, no, I can't right now. And that took us a little bit of time to get that balance. And I think we're at a good place right now with that. He has worked with people who've had babies before and have come back and had extremely good successes at competitions. So he's had that experience, but it is different for everybody. And I don't know those people personally to know if they had a relatively easy pregnancy and, you know, were active the entire time and just came back to win or whatever. Like, I don't know their circumstance, but it's been really important for me to feel like I have a good voice in my own fitness regime and in my dancing. And like, you know, it's one thing to be say, hey, you should come to class tonight. It's like, yeah, I can't. Sorry, I don't have a babysitter.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, it took us a little bit of time to get to the place we're at now, but I feel like we're in a really good position. And I'm looking forward to Worlds training going forward together, because it is a team thing. Like, I have to have his support. And for anybody else out there in this position, like, you have to have the support of your teacher. But they also need to realize that you need to have a huge say in what your training is, because I can't train as much as he wants me to. I just can't, because my body would have all sorts of problems if I did.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I don't want him to tell me to go get my butt in the gym or to get my butt to class when I can't actually go.
Yeah. So. I mean, and it's always that two-way street, or it should always be that two-way street. And I feel like as we get older and more mature, we, like you said, have more knowledge of our body. We know what we can and can't do, but it's also, I think, the time you spend with your teacher too. I mean, I know that I'll have teenagers that I've had since they were, you know, younger. And I know if they tell me that something's hurting them, that they mean it, versus right. maybe someone you don't know as well, who just doesn't like to do drills.
Exactly.
You know, that kind of, right. that kind of trust and honesty and kind of like reputation that builds over time.
Yep, that's super important. No matter if you're coming back after a baby or not, I mean, you have to have that kind of relationship, teacher and student, or else it's just not going to be, it's not going to work very well.
Yeah. So we know you're training for Worlds, and what is that kind of looking like these days?
Well, I'm spending a lot of time at the gym, and part of that is just out of necessity, and part of that is because I'm loosely following Lauren Early's program, her Reaching New Heights. I don't actually have like the pass, like the personal training type setup that they have, but I do have her book, and she has a pretty good training structure that she suggests for the different seasons of training. So off season, preseason, in season, and peak, and then there's a maintenance phase as well. So if you've not read her book, I highly recommend it.
I do too. We loosely follow the same thing.
Mm-hmm. It was really hard for me to follow that in the fall, I'll be honest, because I like my entire training was basically off season just because of where I was at with my fitness. So that was really challenging to stick to it at all. But now that I have a base level of fitness going into Worlds training, I'm able to do that. So I'm wrapping up my off season training right now. And so I basically just follow as much as I can, with what works with my schedule and what works with my body. I'm taking today off, for example, because yesterday after doing my sprint training, I felt like my shins were going to explode. And it's not to shin splints yet, but if it gets there, I know there's no turning back.
Yep.
So I decided to take today off, and it's unfortunate in a lot of ways to me because that's just setting my training back one day. And if I do that every week or a couple times a month, like that really can set me back. But I'm trying to be really patient with myself and just understanding like I'm doing the best thing for my body in the moment, and trying not to be super disappointed. But so I follow her program as much as I can. I can't exercise as often or as hard as I previously could. And so that's where a lot of the patience has just come in and recognizing like I'm going to have to adapt to this. So my struggle the last year has not actually, or 6 months, has not actually been the move to a different region and a different school, but rather my own approach to training and how that's had to change, because I've had a kid and my body is just different. What else am I doing? Things that I've not really done before that I'm doing now, I'm taking glucosamine every day.
For those joints.
Oh yes. And maybe that's something that I could have been doing before, but it's certainly something that I think is more important now. I'm trying to lose body fat. And that's really hard. Everyone thinks that if you nurse, then you're going to lose all of your baby weight really quickly. And that is just not true. But that certainly affects how I'm able to train. And so I'm focusing more on my diet, which is really hard because I like my Nutella and I like, I like eating sweets, and I am all about balance and moderation with my diet. And so being stricter has been pretty challenging, but I have been already noticing results just in the last couple of weeks. And so I'm going to continue with that as much as I can. The problem with the diet that I've found, not just because it's been hard to eat well, but it's hard with a baby to eat well. We don't have all this money laying around that we can just throw at these super healthy prepared meals or even just like all organic produce or whatever. And even if we could, I would not have the time to be making myself that kind of meal all the time. And so it's tough to give myself as much food as I need in order to be giving my baby what she needs nutritionally, but also for myself. And then with a husband who can't come help with dinner all the time, he sometimes works 24-hour shifts. So I'm on my own for basically four meals. It's hard to find the time to make healthy meals and then eat them. A lot of times I do fall back on whatever's just in the cupboard and easily available because I don't have the patience, I don't have the time or the energy to cook some really cool chicken, veggie, grain meal with a protein shake. So maybe as she gets older, that'll be something that I can do more. But for now, it's just hard.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I don't have kids. You are a much more advanced human than I am in that regard. But I mean, even in the days that I was a nanny, it is. It's like you eat when
it's
you
hard.
Can.
Yeah, it's really hard. And the last thing that's something that I've been working on, there is a concept, and I think I had his name pulled up here. Let me look. His name is Patrick McKeon. I can't pronounce it. McKeon. My friend pronounces it in his video, but I don't want to pull it up right now. So my best friend's husband is a physical therapist, and he had posted this about 3 or so months ago, this concept of nose breathing. And basically the premise was if you breathe through your nose, then you're getting better oxygenation and you're teaching your body how to like lose less, like waste less essentially, while you're exercising. And it was really fascinating to me because it's a concept that I had known about without actually knowing about it. Previously in my practicing, especially at class, I would try to only breathe through my nose. And that was more for a presentation reason that I did not want to breathe through my mouth at the end of hornpipe. I really hate it when people are like at the end of their dance. So I just did that mostly for presentation. And so it just kind of became part of my practice. And I didn't do it all the time, but I did it quite a bit. Well, after he posted this video concept, I realized, oh, this is something that I could apply to all of my training. So ever since he posted that, which was pre-Eroctus, I have been training without breathing through my mouth. Even when I'm really winded, you know, after 30 minutes of sprinting, it's kind of hard, but I have been very diligent in making sure that I am only breathing in through my nose and out through my nose. And maybe it's just my level of fitness getting better very quickly, or maybe it's this concept, but I have noticed a huge difference in my capacity to last longer when I'm breathing through my nose.
Very interesting.
It is very interesting, and I really can't go into much more detail than that because it was a while ago that I watched the video, but what I gathered from it was this is something that should absolutely apply to me and is something I'm going to start doing. So if you or if any of the listeners want a little bit more information, I would be happy to send them my friend's video about this, and his name is not Patrick, his name is Justin, but if you want any more information, you can definitely check it out because I think that it is something that everybody should at least consider, especially athletes, and especially people like us where it is a performance advantage to not have the mouth breathing going on at the end. So,
yeah, or if you send me the link, I can put it in the show notes for this episode and people can just click right into it. And it's funny that you mentioned this. I have not thought about this at all, I don't think, since I retired, but I would always breathe in through my nose for the same reason that you said, for performance and so that you're not huffing and puffing. Mm-hmm. And anytime I was side or back facing, I would breathe out.
Yes,
through my mouth, but through my mouth. So I'll have to see if I can test this of the whole only using the nose. And then the other thing I thought of as you're talking about it is Danny and Teen went to some breathing workshop in Houston where it's like you teach yourself. It's Danny and Teen, I wish we could pull you up so you could explain this better than I could, but it was almost like so that you could breathe super quick as if you were hyperventilating because it does something with your like oxygen chambers. I wonder if it's the same person or the same,
or at least the same ideology.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I thought of it too because I've not done yoga a lot, but I have regularly practiced yoga since like 2009-ish. And that's something in yoga that you find is you don't breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth, except in rare occasions. All of the breathing that you're doing is through your nose. Even though there's different kinds of breaths that you can do, almost all of them, at least the ones I know of, are exclusively in and out of the nose. And so like yoga, I mean, that's something that's been around for a long time. And a lot of the aspects of yoga are completely true and applicable to all sorts of other things besides yoga. So I certainly found a lot of validity in what this guy was talking about, especially because of my experience with yoga and nose breathing there.
Fascinating. I love this stuff. I will definitely be checking it out. So
cool.
Listeners, get on that. I will post it in the Facebook group too so that everyone can practice breathing
through the nose. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's all for part one. You can join us again for part two coming up in a couple of weeks, where we go into even more detail about Diana's future and her advice for dancers as they go through their competitive career and into the great beyond of great exams, studio ownership, or teaching. So that's all for today. Follow us on Instagram. Diana's handle is down in the description, and have a wonderful week.